From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a woman quit her job. Tansy Roberts was a childcare worker who left her job this past summer. She told the Washington Post, quote, "The pay is absolute crap for what's required for the position. I can't afford to live on my own and work the childcare jobs that I'm qualified for," end quote. Roberts is one of thousands of workers who have left the childcare industry to take higher-paying jobs with better benefits. Retail companies, banks, even fast food places are paying more than what some childcare workers like Roberts were making. Roberts says she misses the kids she used to see every day, but her new job with a tech company allows her to work from home and not be exposed to COVID. Plus, it pays more than $15 an hour with health insurance. She was making $11.45 an hour at a national daycare chain. According to the Post, the childcare industry is down more than 126,000 workers. It's struggling more to hire than is the restaurant industry. And we know the restaurant industry has had a hard time of it lately. Well, the Post reports that restaurants have rebounded to 92% of pre-pandemic staffing levels, whereas childcare is still below 88%. And we discussed yesterday on this program the staffing crisis having a ripple effect on the economy. Workers leaving the industry, childcare centers are able to care for fewer children. That means more parents must stay home with their kids, pulling many adults, and yes, let's be honest, the numbers say it's mostly women from the workforce. And with parents unable to afford childcare, centers are unable to bump up their workers' pay. So yesterday we talked with the providers, the owners, the organizers, and experts on the policy side. Today we're hearing from people who are, or were, caring for children every day and looking for that help right now. Our guests weigh in on the state of the industry, especially during the pandemic, and I'd like to welcome our guests. In studio with me is Julie Williams, a former child care worker and a colleague here now. Nice to have you. Thank you for telling your story here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us on the line, Bev Bauman is a teacher in a child care center. Bev, welcome.
Thank you.
And Jen Biedemann is an expectant mother who is seeking child care, president of the Child Care Council's board of directors. And Jen, they've told you that there's no child care available until when?
2023, Evan.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. Welcome. How are you doing otherwise?
I'm doing great. I'm related to my third trimester and, starting to panic a little bit that I'm going to be on maternity leave and trying to come back to work and have nowhere to put my daughter. So it's certainly a problem here. And so I'm glad that I can be on the show today to talk about it.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Thank you for making time. And, you know, I want to be clear about something that we mentioned right off the top here. We were telling the story that the Washington Post told about Tansy Roberts, a childcare worker who left her job just a couple of months ago. And she said the pay was awful. She was making $11.45 an hour is what she was making. But it is not just a person who's been working for 6 months or a year who's making around that level. Julie Williams, you worked for almost a decade in childcare as an infant toddler teacher at a full-day daycare. And after nearly 10 years, can I ask what you were making?
$13.50
after more than 9 years.
That is because I had a college degree. If I did not have a college degree, I would have been making less. And that was after all that time.
You would have been making less?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did it occur to you? Well, let me back up a little bit here. Did you like the work?
I loved the kids. I really loved the kids. The work is different. It's very exhausting work, and it's very underappreciated.
Underappreciated in what sense? How do people tend to think about people who have done your kind of work?
Oh, it's so fun. You just get to play with kids all day, which is, if you even get to sit down during the day, it's a good day. It's 30 diapers a day minimum, nap times, teaching colors, teaching shapes, teaching not to bite. It's a lot more than just playing with the kids.
Did you ever hear, so you're a babysitter?
Oh, yeah. And definitely.
What do you say about that?
It's kind of when people say that to me that I just think, you have no idea what goes into raising a kid.
You think, I've never wanted to commit homicide, but it might happen.
But I'm not saying I'm going to, but
a babysitter.
In my other world, it might happen, yeah.
And I wonder if Bev feels the same way. What do you hear, Bev?
I have actually heard, oh, well, your job is so easy. You just play with kids, and yeah, you're basically a babysitter. And I've gotten into pretty intense, heated arguments about how underappreciated that makes us as educators feel, because we are educators, we are teachers, no matter the age level, and how undervalued they feel the students are, because no matter what age classroom you're in, your student is learning. You're essentially hoping to mold these little minds so that they can grow as they get older.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably everybody who doesn't work in any specific job oversimplifies what the job is. People will say to me, mm-hmm. "Oh, well, you just talk on the radio. Like that's all you do is mm-hmm. you talk." And I get it, but at the same time, this is an industry where the pay is so rough, the benefits are so lacking, and the work is so frankly important that to then insult people by devaluing their work or oversimplifying it, I think is a really precarious thing to do, because right now there's a crisis. We learned a lot about it yesterday, and we wanted to take the opportunity today to understand what workers have gone through, what parents are facing when they look for child care. So let's work through both Julie and Bev's story. So Julie, for you, you ultimately decided after close to a decade, can't do it anymore. Was there anything specifically that caused that, or was it sort of a cumulative effect?
I think it was a cumulative effect. I had moved from working in the classroom to an administrative position, which didn't really pay me all that much more. And it was not really an environment I wanted to stay in the way it was run. If you have a spouse and they can give you benefits, that's great. But once I no longer had that, it was not a situation that could stay.
Yeah, it's amazing. Did you feel respected by the parents of the kids that you were working with?
Some of the parents I felt respected by. I worked at a more, I guess you'd call it, higher end daycare in a nicer suburb. So we tended to have very professional parents, a lot of professors from U of R, a lot of doctors. Some of them I felt really valued what I did, and some of them I felt very devalued by, which was interesting because I could tell them more about their child than they knew.
What's an example of something that made you feel devalued?
I think that a lot of it was just cumulative, but when you spend that much time with someone's child, and I saw it as an immense privilege and an immense responsibility for someone to leave their child with me. I understand what it takes to do that. But if you're making that choice and you're trusting me with your child, maybe you also need to listen to what I'm telling you about your child, that I'm not just keeping them alive for 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week or sometimes more.
So sometimes you felt ignored or...
Yes.
Okay. Your views or ideas or opinions not valued. Okay.
Exactly.
Again, not with all parents, but with some. And it's interesting you say this was what you might describe as a higher end facility.
Definitely.
You had wealthy parents sending their kids there, and
yes.
You're still, after more than 9 years, making $13.50 an hour.
Yeah.
How is that? I mean, that blows people away, I think, when they hear that.
I think that now we're talking about it more because it's a bigger crisis because of COVID, but this has always been a problem. They've always had trouble retaining people in the industry, and the pay has always been terrible. Now it's more public, but this is not a new situation by any means.
Did you get into that work, I mean, thinking it was going to be a career?
Not necessarily. I think I got into it thinking it was going to be a job. You can make a career out of it, but I don't know that it's always seen as a career. I think it's seen as something that you just do.
Yeah, and the president of Generations Childcare told us yesterday she wants to get to a point where people who come into this work do view it as a potential career. And one of the things holding that back right now is the pay and benefits, that it's hard to think of it as a career when you know how low the pay is likely to be even after X amount of years, how unlikely it is, perhaps, that you'll get benefits. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. And I also think, at least in my situation and where I was, it was also a lack of continual training because it was just the same thing day in, day out. And once you went through the training at the beginning, we had maybe one big staff meeting a year where we talked about things, but there were not opportunities for continued training, at least that would not be at expense to the employee.
Turnover is tough for any organization. Turnover, I would think, in childcare is even harder because, you know, if you're losing people often, then you've got to retrain new, younger people. They have to get to know the kids again, the families again. And that relationship building doesn't happen immediately. I mean, you can work hard at it, but that's a hard line of work to see a lot of turnover. So when you talk about turnover, you were there for the better part of a decade. That had to be, you had to be one of the longest tenured people there, I would think.
There were a few that were more than I had, but I left in 2012, and I think there's maybe one person still there if I were to go back.
Yeah. And how often were you seeing people leave?
All the time. It happened all the time. For my room, you have 10 kids and two teachers. So if you make a relationship with this teacher, it's hard for you. And it's also hard for the kids because they get really bonded and then you throw a new person in. And if you don't have a permanent person to put in there, you've got turnover all the time of different people coming in. Even when I went into an administrative role, I was still going into classrooms all the time to cover lunches, to cover breaks, because they did not have enough staff.
A listener had expressed yesterday that as a parent, they were hoping that workers would get paid more because their view is essentially, if we're not paying people very much, they're not going to be as invested in caring for the kids. Now, I don't think that that is true for all workers, and I don't think that this listener intended to denigrate people in that way. I understand what the mentality is. What did you see in terms of how invested workers were?
I think it's probably like any other place that some are very invested and some are not, except it's the difference between going to a factory and doing the same thing every day is you're dealing with small people who have big emotions that they don't know how to handle. So you have to be invested every day, every minute, because you've got safety on the line.
Would better pay and benefits lead to maybe even a more invested overall workforce?
It certainly wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Bev, let me ask you about, you know, sort of your path then in your life as a teacher, as a childcare at a childcare center. How long have you been doing the work?
So I have worked in about four different centers within the past 10 to 11 years, ranging from small private centers to a larger corporate size center.
Okay. And do you view it as a career?
When I got into it, and I've heard this phrase used a lot, when some administrators have said that working in childcare can be a career, but it can also be a stepping stone job. So it can be like a job that you take, but this is not going to be your final destination, whether you're going to move on to further schooling or to become like a therapist, a speech, or an OT therapist in schools, or going on to the districts.
And so do you think that that's a rational way to look at workers who come into this field? Is that a normal sort of idea of a career path? Or do you think some of that is tied to the fact that so many people end up in a position like Julie, having to make a decision that, can I keep doing this as hard as this is, for $13.50 an hour after a decade with little to no benefits? I mean, is that part of it, Bev?
I do believe that because of the lack of benefits, some of the low pay scale, you even if you're happy in the placement that you're at right now, you are always looking for, okay, well, how am I going to survive? How am I going to basically have like a have a standard of living? So I have to look elsewhere. So a lot of times you find child care workers who are in school or continuing their schooling so that they can rise above and they can move on to a higher paying job with better benefits.
Yeah, according to data from the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at the University of California, Berkeley, nearly 98% of careers or jobs that are considered, you know, have a career path or an occupation, 98% almost pay more than this field. It's shameful. That is a really editorial word for me to use, but I don't know how else to see it or to think that this society is going to function very well when this is in the bottom 2 to 5% of pay for jobs for American adults. I don't know what we're doing here. Bev, but what do you view then as sort of your own longevity in this field? You know, Julie had to make the decision to get out. The Washington Post reports 126,000 workers in just the last several months or so have gotten out, and it's created a crisis. What about you?
Right now, I am very happy in the current center that I'm at. I work with 4 and 5 year olds, so they will be going on to a kindergarten next year. So we're really getting them ready for kindergarten and getting their like emotional and social skills met and helping them grow with that. But I have been looking into and talking to fellow colleagues who are teachers or are different licensed therapists, and I've been looking into, do I want to go back to school or trying to figure out what would be best for me in the future, in the long term?
Well, you know, that's a question a lot of people are facing now. And Jen Biedemann, you're 27 weeks pregnant. You can't find childcare for, when you think you're going to end up needing it. You figure you'll need it, what, starting next April?
Yep, starting next April.
Okay.
Hopefully.
And when you say no childcare available until 2023, that's according to who? I mean, what's your process been looking here?
So, like you said in the intro, I'm also president of the board of the Child Care Council. And so as our local child care referral and resource agency, I knew like first step when it comes to looking for child care was to call up them in the referral center to say, hey, help me find some locations. And so they were awesome. They gave me a full list. And so I started calling around to some of the licensed and regulated child care centers and home daycares that were on the list. And I started at around 20 weeks of my pregnancy, thinking that that would be enough time to kind of secure child care, because it wasn't until April next year of when I need it. And I just started getting all of the, well, there's a baby boom going on. We have staffing shortages. We can't promise anything. Maybe we can get you on a wait list. Come in and take a tour, but I have 5-10 families ahead of you for a spot that maybe or may not be open for you. And as my husband and I have gone in and done some tours, a lot of the child care staff have been really honest and saying like, hey, we have a serious shortage here of slots. We have a serious shortage of workers for these, like, I could easily expand to have another infant room or another toddler room, but I can't because we don't have the staff to meet these, to meet what's required for them. So, you know, realistically, a lot of the workers have been saying, like, I don't know if you'll have care, and I can't tell you if you'll have a spot or not at all. And some of them have even said, like, 2023 is when we'll have availability at this point in time.
Jen, as you know, and as we mentioned at the outset, what is happening as a result of what you just described is we are seeing more women leave the American workforce than at any time in roughly the last 40 years. We're going back to, right now, we're at like mid-80s level of employment for American adult women. That doesn't mean that only women are leaving the workforce because of this issue, but it is disproportionate. It is, consistent, and the numbers bear that out. So when you're sitting here thinking, boy, I thought I started this process with plenty of time, and now I don't know what's going to happen, and you see those numbers, what does that tell you? What is next for you, and what do you make of all of the, especially the American women leaving the workforce?
I have to tell you, Evan, a lot of my friends who have small children, have really struggled the last 18 months as well in trying to manage. I think it's, if you come from a traditional household with, husband and wife, typically the woman takes on more of the emotional load of raising kids. And, I could see if I can't find childcare, my husband and I are going to have to figure out how do we navigate that? How do we ensure, I always tell everybody, I'm in such a privileged position. I'm a white woman. I work in child health, in children's health. I am the president of the board, and I'm struggling to find childcare for 2022. I can't even imagine for other moms who are living in poverty, who maybe are not as resourced as I am, who have all of these other barriers that they have in trying to navigate to find care for their child. It is horrible. And to Julie and Bev, I am so sorry that you have received any negative pushback, because for me, child care workers are the most valuable people, and they are underpaid, under-resourced, and not given the credit you deserve as professionals, as business owners, as, these experts in childhood development. Because I would lean on a child care worker to understand my child better than me, because that's not what I went to school for. That's not what my credentials are in. So, it feels like it's just this, it's very overwhelming, particularly as a first time parent, to one, just want to have somewhere where your kid can be safe, where they can have those really healthy, strong relationships with the providers, with the staff at the center or wherever they go, so that I can actually go and work, because I love my job. But, it's certainly an emotional strain on me to figure out, how do I ensure she's okay? My daughter's going to be okay when I need to still work to make sure that we can maintain our house and have groceries and all of this other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Listeners, if you want to share your thoughts about what you've experienced with childcare, either how it's going for you in your family with childcare, what you've been able to find or not find, or maybe if you've worked in that industry and you want to share your experience, we'll certainly talk about that too. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. John emails to say, Evan, as a parent with three kids, child care is one of those costs that is significant for parents, but the caretakers do not receive much. Just an observation. There is a real contradiction there in that child care costs are really, really tough for everybody. I mean, especially as Jen Biedemann says, for families that are under-resourced. And yet, so you might assume that, well, then if you work in childcare, you make a lot of money, because it costs a lot of money to put kids in childcare. And it's the opposite. It's one of the worst paid fields. So it's hard to get your head around that. And yesterday on this program, we talked about what's being done about that. So this is where I want to hear from all three of our guests about this, because there are different proposals in New York State at the state level for reimbursement and state support. There's a federal bill. There's two federal bills. There's one that was just passed. It was more support for daycare and childcare. Something like $39 billion. And states had to administer it. Some states are doing better than others. It's been helpful. But as we heard yesterday, it's not going to fundamentally change. It'd be like, you get a bonus, a holiday bonus for whatever work you're doing. But you're not going to change the way you live based on that, because that's a one-shot deal. Whereas there is the Democrats, President Biden, have this $3.5 trillion overall sort of budget plan that they would like to pass, and wrapped up in that is about $450 billion for childcare and daycare supports in various ways here. So about 10 times plus what was passed earlier this year, which was a Band-Aid. This would be something much more substantial and probably would lead to a chance to hire more and pay more But there's a debate over it. Joe Manchin's a Democratic senator from West Virginia. He's kind of considered a swing vote in the U.S. Senate. He says it's too broad. It is that benefits and help should go to only the neediest in society, that the government can't educate and care for all kids, and that without his support, this thing probably doesn't pass anyway. So I'm not sure where it's going to go. But those proposals are out there. New York State, reimbursement rates, that's out there. And then sometimes there's just frustration that parents have. They'll say to senators, well, pay people more. And yesterday on this program, the president of Generation said, I would love to. That's what we want to do. And that's what we're trying to do. But budgets are already tied up. 60 to 80% of budgets at child care and daycare centers go to the workforce. And that's more than most companies and businesses in terms of labor and workforce. So it's tough. Let me ask all three of you about this. So, Julie, like, you know, you're an observer of this now. You've been out of this field. You left for exactly this reason.
Right.
But, I mean, is there anything simple to you about this? I mean, when people say, well, pay the workers more. Well, yes, pay the workers more, but what do you think?
Obviously, and I did leave, but one of my closest friends who I met at the center I worked at is still in this industry, and the pay is still ridiculous. She's lucky enough that she is able to do it with her family situation, mm-hmm. but most people can't, and it's a mostly female field. We had, I think, in the entire time I was there, four guys. So it's the women who are kind of getting the shaft there mostly. But obviously something has to break because it's gotten to a crisis point. It's been building for a really long time, but it has gotten to a crisis point. And to what Jen said before, I'd just like to say the majority of the parents did feel that way and were grateful. And I think when you just have enough of those in your classroom, that's what makes you stay longer.
Mm-hmm. Do you view this as government's responsibility at some level to address more substantially?
I do, because obviously all businesses are run differently. Could some afford to pay their workers more? Yeah, sure. But the majority of them can't. And if they can't, the money has to come from somewhere. And if you're not, this is going to sound so Miss America, but if you're not investing in your children, what are you looking at for the future?
And, you know, Julie, people might say, well, okay, well then raise price of daycare. I mean, have parents pay more.
I don't see how that is feasible at all, knowing what people were paying for daycare when I left in 2012 to send an infant there 5 days a week. People are just going to have to make the decision that is, you know, one of the parents is working mostly just to pay daycare and it's not worth it. And then you have kids who are not socialized well.
Bev, how do you see it? I mean, when you look at the proposed ideas out there at different government levels and you hear what administrators are saying in various organizations, I mean, what's going to work here? What do you want to see happen?
I do know from talking to parents and just knowing different prices of what families are paying to send their children to different child care centers. It is very, very expensive, and they are paying a lot. So there is that response, Evan, that you said, well, why aren't the child care workers getting paid more? And what a lot of parents don't think about is, yes, they're paying for their children to come to the school, but we are also providing, usually it's two meals a day, so breakfast and lunch and then snack, and then we're providing all the toys, and administrators also have to pay for cleaners and upkeep, so there are a lot of expenses on the center's side of things. So I do think that having some kind of state financial help to really, as Jen said, invest in the children, in the students in our center would be a great help, because it's essentially investing in our future. That's what all of the students in the different centers are. They are our future, and child care workers are working so that we can help grow society and grow our future.
What about you, Jen Biedemann? What do you want to see happen next?
Well, I just think it's no surprise to anybody that children are across the board in many different policies are never where government prioritizes investment. And so for me, you know, ultimately, I would like to see a national platform around childcare, because this is not a sustainable model. And, you know, like Julie and Bev were saying, like when even looking for care, it's $325 a week for a family. And even if you have subsidies, it's still a ridiculous amount of money, and the cost is landing on us as individuals. And it doesn't make sense when you look at, you know, the investments that can come from actually supporting the childcare workforce in and of itself. So, like, if we are building those foundations in early childhood for all of our kiddos, making sure that they have those relationships, that they are set developmentally, we know, like, if you look at all of this research that comes out of Harvard from the Center from the Developing Child, others, that there is a huge economic impact for that. But, like, later on, we will not see a lot of health crises and issues that we deal with now that cost the government a ton of money. And so, you know, for me, you know, I would love to see both of the bills go through. I know that the stimulus funding that has come through with the CARES Act and all of that has been great, like, holdover, but it hasn't fundamentally fixed the root problem of what is going on when it comes to childcare across this country. And unfortunately, until we value our childcare workers, until we value childcare as an appropriate profession, as a country, as a nation, we're not going to move this needle anymore. And unfortunately, we're at a point now where it's more than just a crisis. I feel like this is, like, for years people have been talking about, oh, there's a crisis in childcare. Now it's at the point where COVID has exacerbated all of that, right? People are leaving. And so if families can't find care, then, like we were talking about earlier, you know, you're going to see a mass exodus from the workforce, because there's no way that parents can't have anywhere to put their kids, right? They have to be taken care of. So, you know, for me, you know, it's government's responsibility to step in, and they just haven't yet. And we need to get our act together as a state and across the country to make it happen. Because honestly, most of the time, like I said, this emotional load is falling on moms.
Yeah,
moms, and to try and hustle it out.
And Jen, on the data side, Rebecca writes to say, Evan, is there evidence showing people are choosing not to have a child because of the lack of daycare? The short answer I have to that is I don't know. I mean, I suspect that there are some people who have worked out what they feel like they can afford and are either delaying or not having kids because of that. I mean, I'm sure that's true. Is that true in larger numbers, or is that driving a new trend? I don't know. I know birth rates are down for various reasons. This is probably in there and among them. But my guess, Jen Biedemann, is, and maybe you've got more data than I do, but my guess is, if this situation that we are seeing right now doesn't change much over the next 12 to 24 to 36 months, then you will see much more of an impact on what people are reporting as to why they're not having kids. What do you think?
I would say that is very strong. Like, my husband's in his 40s. I'm in my late 30s. You know, we have talked about this for a number of years of, like, do we want to have a kid? And the conversation always comes up of, well, how do we afford to take care of our child? Not just the cost of a kid in general, but childcare in particular. Like, it's $15,000 a year for childcare for one child. You know, for my husband and I, we're probably one and done. Like, I don't know where we would find $30,000 for care. And so, you know, I can't speak for other families, of course, but I know for mine, it was certainly something that we had to talk about in depth before we moved forward with deciding to have this baby.
After we take our only break of the hour, we've got some really, I think, important emails for everyone to hear about daycare, childcare, and this work as a career that it should be, and the value that it brings. We'll read those emails coming up here. You just heard Jen Biedemann, an expectant mother, and seeking childcare, can't find it. She's president of the Child Care Council's board of directors, and she can't find what she needs. Just an amazing story. And part of the reason for that is people like Julie Williams worked for the better part of a decade in this field and then said, I'm making $13.50 an hour. I've been here for a decade. I can't keep doing this. Bev Bauman is hanging in there, a teacher in a child care center, loves the work, but understands why so many workers are asking themselves if they want to stay. And the industry is down 126,000 workers this year. It's huge. So let's take that break, and we'll read those emails next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we talk with two local companies that are helping people who have been disconnected from the workforce for various reasons. They're helping people find new positions and new careers during a time when it is so tough to do that. Then, a conversation about how local companies are finding green energy solutions. Talk with you Friday on Connections.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, let me read some feedback here. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Audrey writes to the program and says, my spouse and I pay over $500 a week in childcare at a local center. Daycare workers are amazing professionals. This is an incredibly expensive cost, but we feel it is such an amazing investment. It has been so hard for the daycare to retain workers. The government needs to step in and subsidize. Parents can't pay more. And daycare workers need to be compensated like public teachers. More and more research shows how important childhood development is before the age of three. This is where we can help kids the most. That is from Audrey. Julie, the kids you worked with were what ages?
I worked with up to 2 years.
Up to 2 years. You probably saw a lot of change in that up till 2 years, right?
When you spend a year with these kids from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, they're completely different children, totally different children. So you get to see all of that, and that's mostly happening at daycare with their interactions with the other kids and the interactions with the staff, and that's, I think, very important.
I know there's a lot of burnout in the field, understandably. I mean, people get burned out working with anybody, let alone kids, you know, because most 2-year-olds, what they rarely do is they're rarely like, you know, Julie, I've been going all day and I've never stopped at, like, how are you doing? They don't usually do that.
As an adult, if you told me right now I could lay down and take a 2-hour nap, I would be all over that.
Absolutely.
As an 18-month-old, when you turn off all the lights, pull out a cot, turn on nice music and rub their back and they're like, no, you know what? I'd rather not.
You're like, please.
It can be a struggle because there's 10 of them. There's 2 of you and there's 10 of them and you're outmanned.
I get why there is burnout in the field. What is it like when you see the jumps that they make in language development, in different, you know, motor skills? I mean, it's got to be amazing.
It's incredible. It's really incredible the first time you say something to them and they actually respond with words. And I had that last class I had that were 2 years old when I last had them. I'm still friends with many of their parents on Facebook, and now I'm watching them all get their driver's licenses. So
kind of surreal.
It's weird because I haven't gotten any older, so I'm not sure why they're all 16 now.
It's
kind of amazing, and I like to think I had some small part in getting them there.
Are there days when parents show up and you say, your child did XYZ for the first time today?
We were always encouraged not to tell certain
let
things.
Let the parents think that they're discovering
because
it.
Because if you have a parent who is already kind of upset about being away from their child for so long, and you're like, oh my God, Joe took his first steps today. It was amazing. And they missed it.
That's a great point. Like, no, you didn't miss it. I'm sure it'll happen.
And then they come in 3 days later and said, oh, he took 4 steps. And you're like, that's amazing.
Did he really? Wow. Bev, what would you say about Audrey's email? I mean, I hope that's validating for you. Not that, you know, you need it. You know the work is important. But as we've discussed, this is a society that doesn't always properly value different kinds of work. What would you say about Audrey's email?
I absolutely love when I've had parents email administrators that I've worked for, and their emails have been shared with me, or they've contacted me directly because I usually share my email in case they want to get in touch with me. And I love when they contact me and they'll say, so-and-so did this at home. Or I get a lot of the next day parents will drop off and say, my child said this, and I immediately went, that must be something Miss Bev says to them. So it's really wonderful. You know during the day that what you're doing is incredibly important, but to see the joy on your student's face when they're telling you something or when they first do something, they're like, oh my gosh, I can do this. Or to hear the impact that you're making on the parents when the parents come in and they tell you something that has happened at home that they've been having a rough time with, but that they're seeing improving, you really feel like, oh, yes, okay, what we're doing is really important. It's making a difference in the lives of not only the student, but the families that you're working with.
Well, and right now it's an even bigger challenge because of the pandemic, and Andrew wants to know how kids are doing with masking, Bev.
Okay. I'm currently in a center where everyone is masked. I know they just recently announced that two-year-olds and up need to start masking before it was a little bit older. So luckily the classroom that I'm in, my students are on the older side, so they're closer to 4 years old, and they've been doing really, really well as far as putting their masks on, fixing their masks if it like falls below their nose. Unfortunately, it seems to be kind of standard for them. They're like, oh, this is just what you do when you go to school, right? So they're very, very used to it, which is helpful for us, but also a little bit sad because teachers are also masked, and some of the younger students are like, we want to see your face. Like, we want to see your smile. Are you smiling at me right now? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you got to smile with your eyes a little. They say that's smizing.
Right. Right.
You know, and I certainly get that. Kids are amazing adapters, but I'm hoping we're not that far away from an off ramp for that. Let me read this email from Kara, and I want to read it to get response from all three of our guests on this. This is what Kara says. I'm so glad this conversation is happening. Childcare workers are essential. COVID turned the spotlight on this topic, but it's always been essential. But like many of the careers or work coded as feminine, it's devalued by the society at large. Childcare should be subsidized by the government so that it's fully funded and the folks that work there make a fair wage for the work they do. We always seem to find money for the masculine coded work, like the military, like police work, etc. It's also systematically devalued because women, and within that, women of color, make up most of the workforce. Thank you to all the child care workers. As a parent of a kid who was in daycare, I still am so appreciative of the amazing teachers he had. We paid more for child care than we did on our mortgage, and it broke our hearts to know that the folks taking care of our son were making so little. If we had to pay any more, one of us would have had to consider leaving the workforce, and it shouldn't be like this. That's from Kara. Jen Bideman, do you agree with Kara's assessment that our society codes jobs as feminine or masculine and pays based on that?
1,000,000%. I think you can look at all of the data of seeing how much women make compared to their male counterparts in any profession. And then when you break that down by race, ethnicity, it's even the disparity continues to increase. And, you know, I really appreciate Kara's remarks because it's true. And I think, you know, I don't want to say it, but part of me thinks that, you know, we devalue childcare because of who the people are who are working in childcare as a country.
Yeah. I mean, pretty remarkable. I mean, we have this conversation every year on this program about the gender pay gap, and I understand that it has been changing slowly over time, but part of the reason that women make less is when what society decides certain jobs are worth. Is a police officer worth that much more than someone helping raise a two-year-old? I am not trying to devalue police work. On the contrary, I'm trying to ask if we can value more other lines of work. And I think looking at it from that perspective is interesting. Julie, you were nodding with Jen. What did you, what
oh,
do you
yeah.
think?
I agree with Kara totally.
Yeah.
You know, I when I was in the field, I was also babysitting on the side for kids who were in my classroom, and I could make $15 an hour watching one kid as opposed to being in the industry and make $13.50 watching 10.
What would we say if police were paid $13.50 an hour?
I can't see that ever happening.
Yeah, it's sort of a pointless hypothetical, right?
I think so, but I'm not sure who's going to grow up to be police officers if we're not putting money into our children and who is raising the children when the parents can't be there, because I would take care of them like they were my own for the time that I had them.
Bev, what do you make of Kara's point that she sees a gender divide in what we decide certain professions are worth?
I definitely agree. Primarily in every center that I've worked in, it's been primarily female-identifying people who are working as the teachers. There have been a few male-identifying teachers in the different centers that I have worked, but I definitely agree that as far as the pay inequality, even with some of the male-identifying teachers, they might be paid a higher scale than the female-identifying teachers because there's such a lack in the workforce that administrators go, yes, we want a male teacher in this classroom. They would benefit it so well that they're willing to bump up that pay rate a little bit, which, yes, it's great to have male teachers in a classroom, but also the other teachers, the female teachers, also deserve a living wage because we are also doing the same work. We are of the same value.
All right, let me squeeze one more email in. Patrick says, to reduce operational expenses, businesses should be subsidized to attach daycare so that employed parents can have the option to leave their child at a daycare that's an attached or nearly attached to their place of business. If we are choosing between work and childcare, why not just put the two together? From Patrick. I mean, that's ambitious. That would be a hard thing to pull off. But what do you think, Julie Williams?
I think it's a great theory, but I'm not sure I see that happening in actual life.
Yeah. Jen Biedemann, what do you think?
You know, I think exactly what Julie just said. I think great idea, but, you know, I know the childcare community has been trying to build those connections with the business community for years. And unfortunately, even when we do have local businesses who are interested in maybe saying, okay, we'll support our employees by offering childcare, there are a lot of very complicated state regulations through the Office of Children and Family Services that really just say, oh, okay, this is really not a profitable enterprise for us. And, oh, this is too many hurdles for us to take on as a business. And so you'll see some businesses do it, and have centers set up, but in talking to some of those centers, you know, I know that it's just a struggle and that it's not what they really had initially hoped for when they signed up. So, you know, I think realistically, will it happen? I don't know. Just given the complex environment and the regulations that are involved around operating a childcare center, it's not an easy business.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bev.
Yes, yes, I do. I think it would be a lot of there's a lot of work that goes into having a childcare business.
Yeah, Joanne says, Evan, listening to the show, and before I go into work, I just want to say that if the state can find money for a new Bills stadium, then they had better find it for something more important, quality pay for such vital child care professionals. That's from Joanne. I know, Joanne, a lot of people agree. I mean, people have been saying this for a long time, smarter than me. A government's budget is a statement of its priorities. That is true. And so in our last minute or so, Jen Bideman, Are you optimistic that you're going to find what you need by April for your child to be?
I hope so. I'm on a number of wait lists. I am in a privileged position, and I know that the Child Care Council staff are hunting for me and any person and parent that calls in looking for care. But again, I think until that additional investment comes through the pipelines from the government, it's going to be a challenge for me and many parents for the next year, couple years or so, until we can get that workforce up and running again.
And Julie Williams, 30 seconds. What do you want people to keep in mind the next time they think they want to say, oh, so you're a babysitter, or there's nothing wrong with babysitting, but you're a babysitter, or you just play with kids all day?
Think about everything that goes into what you're actually doing every day and all the chaos and managing things and never being able to make a plan and having to adapt and have your eyes everywhere, and how much love and care these people are really putting into your children, because I'm 10 years out from this and I can still tell you which kid could only go to sleep with a stuffed zebra and which kid would only go to sleep if you rubbed his eyebrows.
I think there's so much appreciation for the work that Julie, Bev, so many workers have done. And I just want to say, it is nap time. Brian Agnello, who's been working with us today, says, I think it is time for a nap. Julie Williams is right. We all should be taking naps in the afternoon, whether kids want it or not. It's a revolution. Thank you for telling your story, Julie Williams.
Thank you.
Hey, Bev Bauman, good luck to you and all your colleagues. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And Jen Bideman, good luck with the rest of your pregnancy, and thanks for joining us from that perspective, as well as president of the Child Care Council's Board of Directors. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Evan.
All right, Brian Agnello, it's nap time, my man. Thanks for helping out with us today. Megan Mack, producing and engineering. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.